Yes.
Very good. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the August 8th, 2018 afternoon session of the Portland City Council. Carla, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Here.
Udaly? Fritz?
Here.
Fish? Wheeler?
Here.
I'll begin by discussing conduct during City Council meetings. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's office for communications to speak briefly about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first readings of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony, and we'll be discussing that in more detail for this land use matter later. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you're in the audience and would like to show your support for something that is said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct, such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations, will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping keep your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
I would like to just start off by thanking our City Hall security team, Dorothy, and your entire team. I think you guys did a great job this morning under very trying circumstances, and I just want to say for the record, I think it is unconscionable that people would come to City Hall with the intention of, quote, shutting down City Hall, unquote, and then attack our security, including Dorothy. Whatever message you thought you were delivering today, it was completely lost in your senseless acts of violence against our city staff. With that, could you please read the first two items, Carla?
Item 841, consider the proposal of Tim Sotuda, Southwest Hills LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for removal of conditions of approval imposed by prior comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment ordinances for property at 2855 Southwest Patton Road, LU 18112666 CP ZC, and 842, amend the comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment to remove conditions of approval imposed by prior ordinances for property at 2855 Southwest Patton Road at the request of Tim Sotuda, Southwest Hills LLC, LU 18-112666 CP ZC.
Thank you, Carla. First, the city attorney will make some announcements about today's hearing.
Okay. We'll talk about some procedural aspects of the hearing. First of all, it's an evidentiary hearing, which means you may submit new evidence to the council in support of your arguments. I'm then going to talk about the order of testimony today. So first, we begin with a staff report for approximately 10 minutes. After that, council hears from interested persons in the following order. The applicant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present their case. Following the applicant, we'll have people who support the applicant for 3 minutes each. After that, we will have the principal opponent. And in this case, because there's not a principal opponent, there will be two people who will be speaking for 5 minutes each during that time. Following that, the other people who oppose the application will speak for 3 minutes each. Finally, the applicant will have 5 minutes to rebut, and then there will be council discussion. At that point, council may close the hearing and deliberate. This is a non-emergency ordinance, so it will necessarily pass to a second reading. Today, the council may make amendments to the ordinance and findings and direct staff to return with amendments or amendments to the findings. And I'm just going to identify right now, due to some portions of the findings that were not included, we know at this point that we will have to have revised findings, and staff will speak to that in some more detail. There are several guidelines for those addressing City Council today. First, any letters or documents you wish to become part of the record must be given to the council clerk after you testify. Originals or copies of slides, photographs, drawings, maps, videos, or other items you show to the council, including PowerPoint presentations, should also be given to the council clerk so they're included in the record. Second, any testimony, arguments, or evidence you present must be directed to the applicable approval criteria for the land use review or other criteria in the city's comprehensive plan or zoning code you believe apply to the decision. BDS staff will identify the applicable approval criteria as part of their staff report. Third, you must raise an issue clearly enough to give the council and other parties an opportunity to respond to an issue. If you do not, you'll be precluded from appealing to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. Finally, the applicant must raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond. Otherwise, the applicant will be precluded from bringing action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes the attorney's remarks for now.
Very good. Thank you. Do any members of the council wish to declare a conflict of interest?
Here, I'll start.
Commissioner Fish. And Commissioner Fish, just for clarification, I'll ask about ex parte conflicts next, if this is specific to
the
legal definition.
Oh, I have no conflicts. No.
Very good. No commissioners declared any conflict of interest. Does any member of the council wish to declare ex parte contacts or other information gathered outside of this hearing that they'd like to disclose? Commissioner Fish?
Yes, at the request of members of the Southwest Hills Residential League, my Chief of Staff, Sonia Schmansky, and Policy Director, Asena Lawrence, met with a number of citizens for approximately 30 minutes. At the request of the Property Owners Council, my Chief of Staff met with Attorney Christy White for approximately 30 minutes. I have not been briefed on the particulars of either meeting. I also got a letter from Bill Failing. I read about half the letter until I realized it was relevant to this proceeding, so I gave it to my staff. And other than that, there's nothing that prevents me from being impartial in the deliberations of this matter.
Are there any others who'd like to declare?
Yes.
Commissioner Saltzman?
My remarks are identical to Commissioner Fish. The Southwest Hills Residential League met with my Chief of Staff, Matt Grum, for approximately 30 minutes. And also at the request of the Property Owners Council, Matt also met with her, Christy White, for approximately 30 minutes. And I have not been briefed on the particulars of the meeting.
Very good. Commissioner Fritz.
I received an email from David Olson, the former director of the Office of Community Technology, who's here today. Over a year ago, it was before this land use application was submitted, and he asked me to look into the conditions of approval, and I don't remember what we did at that point, and I didn't go back and look at the correspondence. Claire Adamsick on my staff met with some of the neighbors. She told me that the main takeaway from the meeting was that the neighbors are only focused on the retail and are not objecting to the other conditions going away. So if that's not the case, then please make sure you tell me in your testimony. I don't think I've read any emails on this issue. And I think that's the sum of my contacts outside of the record.
Very good. And I have an identical scenario. One member of my team, Michelle Plembeck, met with the Southwest Neighborhood Association, and she understood that that would be an ex parte contact and therefore could not share the information of that session with me, and she has not. I've been briefed with Michelle on the procedural issues around this issue, but not on any of the substance. So with that, is there anybody here who would like to ask any of the commissioners any questions about their declared ex parte contacts? I do not see anyone who has requested that.
All right, so we'll begin with the staff report for 10 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, and welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, Commissioner Fritz, Saltzman, and Fish. I'm Mark Moffett, Bureau of Development Services. I have a very brief presentation, but I'll be available for questions later. So again, the case file number today, LU18-112666, CPZC, and I am here representing the hearings officer recommendation. So in summary, and I'll mention briefly, I do have Kurt Kruger and other PBOT staff here. There aren't any big PBOT issues, but if you'd like to speak with Kurt, he's available. In summary, the proposal is a comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment to amend prior conditions of approval from an old zone change and the related ordinances at the former Strohecker's or Lamb's Thriftway grocery store site in Portland Heights. This is unusual because there is no change in the zoning map proposed. We are simply, by the code, required to go back through the same process we did that applied those conditions. So in 1984 and 1988, they did comp plan zoning map procedure to get these ordinances and conditions in place. So we have to go back through that same process to amend or delete them. This is just a sort of abbreviated and partial list of the conditions, but generally the request is to remove ordinance conditions requiring that the site use be limited to a grocery store. Those conditions also prevented expansions or exterior changes to the building. There are some parking and loading restrictions that go a little beyond normal zoning code requirements. There are several conditions that restate other code requirements that would apply regardless. And then there's some rooftop and equipment screening, other sort of detail conditions about setbacks, exterior signage, etc. We have the standard approval criteria in Chapter 810 for comprehensive plan map amendments. The primary evaluation in this review is an on-balance evaluation of all the city's comprehensive plan goals and policies. So you look at the entire universe of goals and policies, you look at the policies that are relevant, and you decide whether, on balance, the proposal is equally or more supportive of those goals and policies as a whole than the existing situation. Again, it's not like a yes-no list of criteria that we're dealing with usually. It's more of a discretionary, sweeping, big-picture look. In this situation, because our case crossed the timeline of May 24th, old and new code, we did get findings on both the old and new comp plan goals and policies, but it's really just the new comp plan goals and policies that are most directly relevant because we're here after May 24th. And then the zoning map amendment approval criteria, which are just basically are the public services there in Chapter 855. The zoning map, we actually have two. We have the CN2 zone map that was in place on the day they applied. That has since changed to CM1. They're roughly proximate zones, sort of the low scale, neighborhood level commercial zone. There's a site plan that doesn't really, not really that relevant or pertinent to the case. It just shows sort of the aerial view with the building footprint and the parking on the west side and then the street. This is another aerial view just showing you the site in relation to the surrounding neighborhood. Lots of single-family homes, nice, well-maintained homes, and Portland Heights Park immediately to the west, and where frontage is on Patton Road. There is a bus, the Council Crest bus, which is not a frequent service bus, runs by the site. There's a stop right out front. And just a picture from Patton Road, looking back at the existing building. It's just really one story from the road. It does have a basement level on the interior of the site, which slopes downhill to the north. Just a shot of some nice houses across the street. This is the Patton Road side of the park. Portland Heights Park has kind of two levels. This upper level you're looking at now with the restrooms and a tennis court and a small play area. And then there's a lower field area with a stairway sort of descending from the parking lot area of the site down to the lower field on the west edge of the park. This is a vast simplification of the neighborhood comments, but the Southwest Hills Residential League has expressed concerns about several of the relevant goals and policies and would like to retain, I'll let them speak for themselves, but they are looking for retention of the grocery retail use at the site and possibly some involvement in the future changes at the site. Most neighbors objected to the removal of the conditions. Most neighbors who wrote in talking about the need for local shopping opportunities, neighborhood character, the distance and difficulty of getting to other grocery stores, the surrounding residential and park context, public involvement in the application and process for new development at the site, lack of public transportation to the site, and questioning the applicant's claim that the grocery operator is not viable at the property. We did have one neighbor write in support of the proposal, suggesting that it should just be redeveloped per the new zoning. But in general, the arguments were that the neighborhood retail use was critical to the livability of the site and the neighborhood, and residential-only uses would be problematic in a redevelopment scenario, and there are a lot of just concerns stated in many different ways about the neighborhood character and traditions. My job here, again, is to represent the hearings officer analysis. Just a quick summary of that. The hearings officer found that, based on the evidence, a grocery store was no longer viable as exclusive use on the site, noting that even free rent did not entice tenants. I think the free rent was offered to Trader Joe's. Hearings officer found that conditions of approval are overly restrictive and inhibit the use of the site for housing or other economic developments, contrary to many city goals and policies, and that on balance, the proposal to eliminate those conditions would support the city's economic livability and housing goals and policies. Hearings officer found that there was no evidence in the record that the current rezone, or some arguments made that when they changed it to CM1, that was intentionally meant to include the old conditions. There's no evidence in the record that the Planning Bureau was aware of these conditions when they changed the zone or kept it because of those conditions. And we have a condition of approval for trip cap. I won't go into the detail. There doesn't seem to be any controversy about that. And there's no issues with the statewide planning goals or housing loss mitigation. For the zoning map amendment, most of the public services were available. We do have conditions of approval regarding a sewer easement on the site and a trip cap for future development. This is just the hearings officer analysis. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that. It's just a straight cut from the staff report. I will mention, and unfortunately I just discovered this morning reading through the 100-page hearings officer recommendation, is that, and I'll consider it a scrivener's error, he left off a 2 through 4 of the zoning map, excuse me, of the comp plan criteria, which is the findings about the statewide planning goals. There's like 6 pages there that was never up for concern. And A3 and A4, which are about no net loss of housing doesn't apply and legislative projects doesn't apply. But he significantly left off the zoning map amendment criteria, which is where we have all the findings triggering the sewer and trip cap stuff. So we do have to do findings at the very least to plunk those missing findings that were in a revised staff report and publicly available into council's findings. That was more time than I hoped to take, but I don't have anything else.
Commissioner Fritz.
I have one more ex parte contact to report, and that is that I have visited Portland Heights Park multiple times, both for the Southwest Hills Residential League summer ice cream social, although I didn't get to go this year, and so therefore have partaken in the delights of the ice cream that was available.
Very nice.
And I'm still the Parks Commissioner, so many of my questions will be talking about the impact on the parks. I do have one question for you, though. Did the old CN2 zone require commercial?
No. You could have done all residential.
Thank you.
Yep. Anything else?
Not yet. Thank you. Could you speak into the microphone?
Yeah, Christy White is speaking for the applicant for 10 minutes, please.
Very good, thank you. I'm letting you do the.
I know, and I was aware of that, but I seem to have forgotten. So I'll be on it next time.
No worries.
Sorry.
No, that's good. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I am Christy Carlson White, appearing for the applicant, and with me here is Renee France, who's also been working on this case through the lower levels. The purpose of this request, as you were told, is to remove a set of conditions from 1984, which are 34 years old, that among other things require a single use or a grocery store on this site. No other use is permitted on the site. If we can't find a viable grocery store, we're left with no economically viable use of the site. And that is exactly what has come to pass. Strohhuckers went out of business in 2016, and the site has remained vacant ever since. This two-year vacancy occurred and persists, even though my client is a grocery store developer who bought the site to continue a grocery store use. This despite three brokers being engaged over the better part of 2 years to lease or sell the site to a grocery store, also to no avail. But before we turn to the substance of the presentation, I'd like to establish what I think is some important procedural history and other elements of the case. First, my client and his team have met with the community on multiple occasions to explain the dilemma that is created by this condition. And we want to be sure it is understood that we get it. We get the neighbor's disappointment that the grocery store is no longer viable. It's disappointing to my client as well. We understand the deep appreciation for the convenience of such a use in that location and the gathering area it became for the neighborhood. I'm sorry, am I too loud? I just saw the 6 to 8
inches. It's fine, but yeah, okay. about this distance.
Okay. If a grocery store was viable, my client would have made it happen. But we cannot dismiss the fact that times have changed in the grocery business and such a restricted use on this site leaves us with no use at all. My client will continue to commit to best efforts in the development or marketing of this site to find some neighborhood-serving retail use to incorporate in any redevelopment. We cannot be sure of what the future will hold, but we can be sure that we will use all commercially reasonable efforts that are invited by the new CM1 zone to attract a retail, neighborhood-serving retail, hopefully food-oriented retail to the site. Second, the single-user condition was actually requested by the then-owner of the property, not the neighborhood, as a way of converting his non-conforming illegal use to a legal use under the zoning code. In fact, the owner wanted to expand his store on the site but was prohibited from doing so because it wasn't a legal use at the time, and expansions of that non-conforming use were also not allowed. That seems a little ironic now, I understand. But the conditions were placed on the site as a measure designed to limit or restrict commercial uses instead of a permissive set of conditions inviting the commercial use. Second, like any other condition of a land use review, the code under 33730-140A permits changes to the conditions, whether adopted by ordinance or not, particularly here where the conditions are over 3 decades old and span multiple zone changes. The code requires, as Mark said, that you use the current procedure for the same procedure that originally imposed the condition, and that's why we're here in front of you with a comp plan and zoning map amendment, even though we're not amending the comp plan or zoning map. Now turning to the staff report and recommendation of approval to the hearings officer and the hearings officer's decision. Of course, in cases like this, the planning staff and hearings officer, and ultimately this council, must tether their decision to the relevant approval criteria. Most relevant here is that the requested designation for the site has been balanced against all the relevant comprehensive plan policies, and on balance has been found to equally or more supportive of those policies than the old designation, which is the old condition here. So the legal question is whether allowing all the uses that would be permitted under the CM1 zone, which includes retail and includes a grocery store and includes residential, is equally or more supportive of the comp plan as a whole than restricting the use under that very same comprehensive plan that is the guiding policy document for the CM1 zone. It is hard to decide how we would conclude that allowing all of the possible uses under CM1 zone that's implemented by the comprehensive plan isn't equally or more supportive than undermining those same policies to restrict it to just one particular user. It's also important to recognize that we, again, are not changing the comp plan or zone in this case. We are only removing a restrictive condition of approval and a set of conditions around that. The Bureau of Development Services planning staff and the hearings officer conducted a thorough evaluation under that applicable approval criteria, read all of the policies, balanced all those policies, and found that the majority, if not almost all of them, maybe absent one, were equally or more supportive of removing the condition. I think it's important here just to remind everyone that under any CM1 zone scenario, this proposal is highly consistent with the neighborhood character and all of the policies. CM1 is by its name a low-density, mixed-use zone. The maximum FAR is 1.5 to 1, and the base height is 35 feet. The height for the balance of the neighborhood is 30 feet, so we're talking about a difference of 5 feet. Further, the CM1 zone would allow the myriad of uses that we've heard people are interested in this property. One, a neighborhood-compatible use in a residential neighborhood. Two, a retail use without any residential use at all would also be permitted in CM1 and seems to be even preferred by some who've been involved in this case. A mix of residential and retail uses is also permitted in CM1 and seems to be preferred by still others in the neighborhood. I guess the point here is that each one of these scenarios is permitted, and all are consistent with CM1 zoning and consistent with the neighborhood character and compatibility and neighborhood-serving convenient retail uses. We are not aware of any other CM1 zoned property in the city of Portland or any other neighborhood in the city of Portland that is permitted to handpick a use within a zone, like retail use, and demand that only that use be allowed, even if that use is no longer feasible. That allowance would be a super spot zone and completely inconsistent with the city's comprehensive planning efforts. Lastly, the CM zone is a, quote, small-scale zone intended for sites in dispersed mixed-use nodes within lower-density residential areas. The zone allows a mix of commercial and residential uses. Development is intended to be pedestrian-oriented and compatible with scale and characteristics of those adjacent residentially zoned lands. That code language exactly describes the relationship of this site to its neighbors. It's small scale, it's a dispersed mixed-use node, it allows a mix of residential and commercial uses, and it's pedestrian-friendly. Thus, the staff and HO and hearings officer found that on balance, this proposal to lift the single-user restriction and restore the balanced CM1 zone was equally or more supportive of the comp plan than leaving the restriction. I just want to address really quickly evidence in the record about the extensive efforts, because I just think this is a really important issue. The zoning code doesn't necessarily require that you demonstrate your efforts to disprove a use, but there is a condition here that requires grocery only, so I think it is relevant and appropriate for the neighbors to know what kind of effort we went to. The applicant provided evidence of the extensive efforts to attract a grocery store. There's a letter in the record from Marcus and Millichap, Exhibit 2, to the application, detailing the effort to market this to 12 different identified grocer co-ops, other brokers and developers in the grocery industry, nearly unanimous feedback that the site did not have the population density to justify even a small or urban grocery concept, and the location wasn't expected to pull customers from other submarkets. The letter is supported by another letter by Stephen Neville, who was also involved in those efforts, reaching the same conclusions. And perhaps the most telling evidence is that Trader Joe's was offered an opportunity to set up a grocery here at the site for a period of 1 year without rent, and they weren't interested in the offer. It probably would have been appropriate for a year, but what they said is the long-term viability of that grocery after a year of free rent was not something they could invest in. Some have argued that 2 years is not enough vacancy to demonstrate that a grocery use is not viable. We can tell you with the utmost confidence that it's quite long enough for a property owner who has no economically viable use of the site during that term. And finally, and most importantly, if a grocer ever does become a viable use on this site again, any level of grocer, a small meat and cheese deli to a grocery store, it would be allowed use under the city's adopted CM1 zoning. Thus, removing the condition does not remove the option for a grocery store, a cafe, an ice cream shop, a bagelry, any other thing that would be viable in the future. If we can market this site as a true CM1 zoned site, which allows any developer in Portland to potentially develop a mix of residential and neighborhood serving retail, we have a much better chance of attracting the very user that the neighborhood is interested in seeing at this property. If the argument is that my client should not have purchased the site with the condition, or he doesn't deserve to have the condition lifted, that kind of seems well off the point. The fact is, after 34 years, the single-user condition completely removes any viable use of the site for anyone, my client or anybody else. And there's no sound planning reason to now undermine that CM1 zoning when it in fact invites and would implement what hopefully the neighborhood would appreciate on the site. The CM1 zoning is exactly what this site needs to fully serve the neighborhood and the dispersed mixed-use node. Therefore, we're asking you to uphold the staff recommendation and hearings officer.
So, may I have a question?
Commissioner Fish.
Yeah. So, Ms. White, you said at the beginning that your client commits to making best efforts to find neighborhood retail use, all commercially reasonable efforts,
yes,
blah, blah, blah. We may hear a request later that that get memorialized as a condition of approval.
Mm-hmm.
And could you give us your best sense of the difference between your representation and a condition of approval and what your view is of that?
Sure. So they could be the same thing. A condition of approval that requires some commercially reasonable best efforts that are typical in the industry. My concern with that language is probably your concern too, and planning staff's concern and the neighborhood's concern, which is how do we prove it? And what kind of slippery slope is that, and what standard do we use to judge whether or not we did well enough? A replacement for that is a time period. We do well enough for 3 months, 4 months, and then we demonstrate what those efforts were. After being able to market the property as actually a CM1 zone property. See, that's a fact here. It's a simple fact, but I think it's a really important one. We haven't been able to go to the market with a CM1 zone. We've only been able to go to the market with grocery store only, and we have completely failed. So the opportunity to go to the market with CM1 zoning and say, look at this, it's a neighborhood dispersed mixed-use node, look at the support you have for a neighborhood serving retail use, and emphasize that in the marketing efforts, and then I feel pretty confident that with the development community that we have in the city of Portland who knows exactly how to do that and have an ice cream store next to a park in a residential neighborhood, we could pull that off. The only concern is, how do you measure that? What needs to be proven? What is a commercially reasonable best effort? And how will that operate as precedent and other efforts on other sites that are in CM1 zone? But just make no mistake that my client is ready to market this heavily as a CM1 zone property that would attract such a use.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, we move to supporters of the applicant who each have 3 minutes.
So name for the record. Name for the record, we do not need your address. The microphone slide around
Everett.
About this much distance is the right amount of distance. If you hear your voice popping, that means you're probably a little too close. It's a pretty sensitive microphone. When you have 30 seconds left, you'll see the yellow light come on. And when your time is up, you'll see the red light come on. We just ask everybody, when you see the yellow light, wrap up your points. And when the red light comes on, please stop so other people can testify.
So it's my understanding that there's nobody signed up on the supporters of the applicant, so we'll move
to... That was a lot of wasted breath then. There you go.
Well, there are other people who will testify.
Good.
The principal opponent, which is the two folks who want to do 5 minutes of testimony.
Very good. Is that five each or five total? Five each.
5 minutes each.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Carrie Richter. I'm an attorney at the law firm Bateman Seidel, and I represent Blythe Olson, who is a neighbor who lives across the street from the subject property. First, I submitted a letter, and I participated before the hearings officer, so I've got a number of letters in the record. First, I want to point out that the City Commission is not under any obligation to revisit this issue at the applicant's request. As the staff explained, these conditions were attached to the property in 1984. The City Council revisited all of its zoning as part of its comprehensive plan and, in fact, rezoned this property from CM2 to CN1. That suggests that, and as part of that, reaffirmed the conditions. Added to the comprehensive plan policies that talk about local access to food and how important that was. That was part of the Portland plan. Part of the equity in the Portland plan was local access to food. And No party during that proceeding objected. No party came in and said, when this applicant owned the property and said, wait a second, I've got these owner's conditions that I need to have removed. That never happened in 2016. And now they're here asking for special treatment, asking for conditions to be removed, when just 2 years ago we went through this and made a determination that not only were the conditions appropriate, we were going to reaffirm those conditions with special plan policies that supported that. The mistake that the hearings officer made in his decision is that he assumed that all of the plan policies would actually be met. The replacement project would include everything. It would include housing that would be affordable. It would include local access to food. It would include jobs. It would include office. It would improve pedestrian improvements. It would have sustainability values. Of course, the CM1 zoning is compatible with the comprehensive plan because that's the zone you all picked. And of course, whatever that development is, it cannot meet all those plan policies. It won't it can't. The reality is whatever is developed, it won't do all those things. The property could be redeveloped to be one single family structure. One. It would not encourage housing. It would not encourage jobs. It would not encourage local access to food. It would not do any of those things. So when you keep saying, oh, well, it opens up the door, it does open up the door for the unknown. And it's the unknown that is so scary to everybody in this room. Aside from the three plan policies that were found not to be met, the hearings officer failed to consider and give proper weight to specific plan policies, both in the Southwest Neighborhood Plan. The Southwest Neighborhood Plan is specific to the Southwest Neighborhood, which means those policies deserve extra special attention. And one of those plan policies is to preserve a sense of space. You are going to hear testimony that site, as a commercial node, preserves a neighborhood character-defining element, which is the commercial component and a grocery store where everybody can get together and everybody can know what's going on with their neighbor, which is as important now as it's ever been. There are also specific plan policies encouraging local access to healthy food, which is goal 4C. There are policies about hazard resilience that this grocery store will serve, and there are talks about focused growth. The City Council has an opportunity here to, should we open these conditions up? Are many of them unnecessary? Absolutely. I don't think anybody in this room is going to say that where the garbage enclosure matters at all in comparison to how important the use is to this community. It's true that a number of the other plan policies you may hear testimony about are specific to centers and corridors, and this site has not been so designated. I'd like for you to consider the fact that even though this isn't a designated site or corridor, it acts like one. It acts like one for this neighborhood that does not have any other commercial zone property nearby. This is largely a policy call for the council. Are you willing to cede the only zoned and planned opportunity for providing a much-needed grocery and services to the property in exchange for a proposal that could be one single house? It is not true that conditional zone changes are an anomaly in land use. The trip cap that's proposed is going to be a condition. We often preserve land for purposes that may not be economically viable right now. We do it for industrial land. We do it for farmland particularly. So it's not true that we can't impose new conditions, and I urge you to either retain them or think carefully about the replacements and preserve grocery on this site.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time. My name is Shannon Hiller-Webb, and I am a neighbor in Southwest Portland. I have been part of the grocery industry for the last 8 years. I started as a project manager for New Seasons Market and left in 2002 to be the co-founder of Green Zebra Grocery, a small format local grocer. I currently consult with small format grocers, and I do product development and strategic planning. I have reviewed the hearings officer recommendations and the influence of the Marcus and Millichap letter that weighed in his considerations, and thought I would provide some context. The grocery model is rapidly changing. Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods in 2017 arrested the industry, and many grocers slowed and halted their growth plans to reassess the impact of the acquisition on the market. New Seasons and Green Zebra both slowed their plans. The timing of the Marcus and Millichap approach to these grocers is not lost on me. They were retained in February 2017 as the news was spreading about the Amazon Whole Foods deal and the official announcement in June 2017. Risk assessment for the industry was at an all-time high given the timing of their approach to the Strohecker space. I would like to specifically discuss the grocers' approach from their letter. It appears that they may have targeted sheer numbers of grocers rather than good fit. 8 of the 14 stores have operating facilities within 3 miles of the subject property. That would need a cannibalization study related to the impact on their other stores and could limit the likelihood of the space being viable for them. In addition, several of the companies would not have been an ideal demographic trade area fit to begin with. I provided a list of those grocers in my testimony you should have before you. The brokers hired may have only considered a traditional grocery marketing approach, regardless of grocer audience, because of the ordinance restriction. Using a traditional grocery marketing when presenting to small format, single unit, and co-ops would prevent them from considering the site viable. Marcus and Millichap did not support their letter with evidence such as site overview, terms or market analysis to determine grocery store viability that would allow me to come to the same conclusion as their approach findings. I have provided a list of those grocers as well. If I may take a moment to specifically address a couple of the other grocers listed. Trader Joe's faced neighborhood opposition from Portland residents in 2014. Their new store announcement was met with gentrification concerns and protest, and they withdrew. I'm not certain that we would be the right trade market as there's high demand for their brand nationally. Thriftway was the last tenant, so I'm not quite certain if they never considered that the right site, why they would be reapproached. Providor is a standalone multi-tenant store that opened in February 2016, and I'm not certain it was the right timing while they were still perfecting the current opening. Market of Choice has a small format store in South Burlingame. It is not their core competency, and I don't believe it will be a venture that they will pursue with a similar footprint. Natural Grocers was a likely candidate based on demographics, growth strategy, and site specifications. They seek underserved areas, especially for those seeking healthy options, and often act as an anchor to community shopping areas, and they are considered a national small format grocer. The applicant is asking the city to accept that a traditional grocery is no longer tenable and the restrictions protecting for that use must be removed. While we can accept that the grocery format is changing, it does not make the case that the grocery ordinance should be removed, but rather updated to retain the resource for the neighborhood. They are not mutually exclusive. The neighborhood has proven support for a grocer at this location for over a century, and it is entirely short-sighted to conjecture a grocery is not needed. The conclusion that the Strohecker site could not support a grocery store is not supported by critical, independent analysis and merely shows an inquiry was made. I agree that all the conditions listed could prevent a new model grocer from going into the building, but at an updated mixed-use retail grocery provision, the viability increases. The applicant's attorney claims in a letter dated June 2018 that the current owner and operator has grocery sites, which begs the question why more industry-supporting documentation of a good-faith effort was not provided, given industry landlord expertise. Such things as demographic data, trade area specifications, forecasts, demographic studies for 1 mile and 2 mile rings, and daily trips. The companies I work with determine that education level, population density, and average household income are the three main demographic indicators. College education levels above 60% and household income above $45,000 determine best fit. With a revised mixed-use grocery favorable conditions, I believe this current current grocery market landscape, small format grocer is a viable candidate and also could really help solidify the space as a commercial node. There are a couple of conditions that small format grocers require that is not available on all commercial land that this specific space does satisfy. Parking of 10 to 20 spaces, ingress, egress, preferably signalized with high visibility and good daily traffic counts. Conclusion, this small format grocer is oftentimes a fresh shop that includes produce, meats, and prepared foods, which would help support other retail businesses adjacent to it.
Thank you.
I have a question there.
Commissioner Fish.
Ms. Richter, it seems to me we can have a back and forth about what the market is or isn't going to do, but it's also we'd be putting the hearing officer in an impossible position to be as smart or smarter than the market. The market is going to do what the market thinks is in its best interest.
We've seen that in the kind of housing that we've gotten in the last 4 or 5 years. It's almost been exclusively at the luxury end. The market has spoken very clearly about that. What I'm concerned about here is imposing a condition that an applicant can't meet and therefore having an empty building for an indefinite period of time, which I don't think either side views as a win. What did you think of Ms. White's concept of putting a time limit on seeing whether with the CM1 zoning there is any additional interest? And I mean, I'm a big fan of the Green Zebra model. I mean, there's one up around Portland State that we go to regularly. I get that there's different models and niches, but at some point the market is either going to say yes or no. And what do you think of the idea that she floated that we allow the change, but we put some kind of time limit on testing the waters, if you will?
My concern with that is that what happens if it doesn't? I mean, how is the neighborhood going to have a voice in that discussion? In that, how the site is marketed, and in what ways, and to what effect? I mean, there's not. I think the market has spoken when they've shown us that you can build 19 houses on this site and make $800,000 a house, and make a lot more money than you can putting a grocery store. That's why they're doing this. So, my concern would be the best efforts. My concern would be what would be the fallback to if it doesn't work. My concern would be that there hasn't been any proposal. One of the things that I would suggest, rather than this time limit that Ms. White is proposing, would be let's have a proposal. Why can't they bring a concept for a proposal? They can market a property as a CM zone site and go in with a partner and concept plan this and come in with a proposal. There's no reason why we have to remove the conditions first. Why does the neighborhood have to give up everything first? That doesn't, particularly when it's this important. So I would say let's hold off. If we need to hold off, if we need to set a time so the developer has some or the applicant has some certainty, let's hold off for 6 months and let them try to market the property for CM1.
So what's a good example of precedent for us where we've had a similar set of facts? You know, I'm struck by the fact that there's a lot of nostalgia here for when there was a Stroeker's and a neighborhood gathering place. I grew up in a very small town in upstate New York. If someone had said we're taking away the diner or the movie theater or the corner news store, I would have stirred the same feeling. But I'm also cognizant of the things change. Business models change. The world changes. What's an example of a precedent that you can point to where we've grappled with this issue in some form or fashion?
I can't name you a precedent in Portland. I think you do as a legal matter when you preserve industrial land. We don't look at whether manufacturing is the highest and best use for land we preserve it for industrial uses.
But in fairness, the industrial land issue is very different because whatever we do on industrial land has consequences to other parts of the comp plan. If we don't have a requirement right now that says we have to have so many acres of grocery store capacity. Now we are a city that's committed to addressing these deserts, these food deserts. We care about access to healthy food, but when it comes to industrial land, if we degrade industrial land, then we potentially get out of step with state law in terms of requirements of setting aside enough industrial land. We can argue about whether we're getting the biggest bang for the buck in terms of jobs on the industrial land. But that seems to me entirely different than the grocery store example. It doesn't have the same related public policy concerns. We're not going to get in trouble with our state friends over not having an adequate supply of grocery store land.
I mean, I appreciate that it's not, the protection of grocery stores is not a state law. I fully appreciate that. But you have, in effect, made it a city law by identifying it as many times and as many ways as the benefit realized by local access to food and the walkability and the sustainability values that are achieved with that. But conditional zone changes happen all the time. And the example I can give you, because I'm the deputy city attorney for Oregon City, in Oregon City, land gets annexed. And when land gets annexed, people have to give up certain rights in order to become annexed. And as part of that, we condition what they can do. We impose limitations on when they can connect to services. I mean, there is a trip cap that is proposed for this. A trip cap is really no different. It's a limitation on trips because it's what the capacity our road can handle. Limiting the zoning because this is the place where a grocery store should go is really no different in terms of looking at what the policies we've identified and working hard to achieve them.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz and then Commissioner Saltz.
I really appreciated your expert testimony. That was really interesting, and I haven't read all of the details that you mentioned. Thinking of the Hillsdale community who had a grocery store that went into various different ownerships and is now a food front. Was food front co-op looked at as an option?
It was not identified as one of the co-ops that in the letter. They only broadly said co-ops. I think I can't speak to it specifically because it wasn't identified.
Yeah, I noticed that many people have the 1,000 strong buttons on. And I know that the co-op model is based on memberships and people basically committing to shop there. So
I'm a member. That,
so that's something that wasn't necessarily considered in the analysis that was done. Is that what I'm hearing?
On the applicant's behalf?
Yes.
No, well, they did mention co-ops were approached, but they didn't list out the co-ops that they did approach. So it's unknown to me.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then, Ms. Richtoff, I was surprised to find out that our CM1 zone does not require commercial. In fact, none of our commercial zones require commercial, which is something that I will be thinking about and talking to the planning staff about. But then the CN2 didn't either. Are your clients, is the neighborhood completely fixed on a grocery store, or would any kind of retail requirement to provide some kind of place where you could walk to get food be a second best?
I represent only one owner. But my understanding is that the commitment right now is for some fresh access to food, and that fresh access to food is critical.
Yeah. So that's something I'll be looking to hear in testimony as to whether it has to be a full service or specialty grocery store, or whether the other options, the bagel shop or restaurant or whatever, because I think this is. There's only a few neighborhoods in Portland where there's no commercial properties. And so to me, looking through the comprehensive plan, and knowing that area, particularly in the relationship to the park, there does seem to me to be some need and desire for, if we're going to talk about 20-minute neighborhood, this neighborhood's not going to have 20-minute service on a lot of things, but it wouldn't have any option for food purchase if this goes away, correct?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Saltzman.
So who do you represent, Ms. Richter?
I represent Blythe Olson, who's a property owner on Patton Road.
Oh, property owner.
No, property owner.
Okay, when you said owner, I was thinking like
no,
retail.
A property retail. Owner.
Okay. So I guess, I appreciate your expertise, appreciate your testimony, but, I know from all of our hopes and aspirations as a city, we want grocery stores everywhere. And they're very hard. They have their own chemistry, as you very well attested in your testimony. It's very hard to jawbone a grocer into opening at a location we want them to open at, whether it's South Waterfront, whether it's right over here, River Place. We've tried. And they have their own calculus, and they say, thanks for the attention, but no thanks. So I really, as much as I have fond memories of Strohecker's and everything else, I really think we're trying to put a square peg into a round hole. And it's just, we can hold on to this notion maybe as long as our memories want to endure. But I just, I haven't seen anything happen there since Thriftway and Strohhecker's went away.
But so, we also have more opportunities and different varieties and different types of grocery stores than we've ever had before. You know, 10 years ago,
right, which all those things should mean somebody should be there now.
Well,
there should be a Green Zebra there. There should be a food front. I mean, by all accounts, they should be there by now, and they should have been open for 2 years at least.
May I say something? I can't confidently say why, because there wasn't any evidence brought before the hearings officer to show their good faith efforts in tailoring a marketing plan to capture something other than a large format grocer. Now, I get that they have conditions on there, but it doesn't preclude the other new market landscape to exist there when they've only been marketed to with conditions and a traditional grocery approach. Again, there was really no evidence provided other than a list of groceries, so I can't confidently say how they were approached, but I think it's premature for us to say without that evidence that it's not potential rent
and so,
clients.
But by removing the conditions, doesn't that really, I think, as the owner's representative said, that opens up all the possibilities in the world any kind of a market or anything else for that matter? But is that what the fear is, that it's going to become a residential property?
I can't speak for the neighborhood necessarily. I can speak to my area of expertise. I think there's not a lot of commercially zoned properties that suit a grocery store, nor do I know of neighborhoods that have quite the limited commercial capacity that this neighborhood does. And again, in line with your own Portland plan and goals, removing this as a mixed-use grocery component with new conditions reflecting the new grocery environment, I think is a loss for this community forever. They will never see this commercial property come back. There is not a single other commercial property within their zone, their neighborhood, that will allow for it to ever come again. That's a serious deficit that they will never regain. And again, there's certain conditions that are required to even have a small format grocer that are suited in this space and no other.
So why in your opinion did Strohhecker's and Thriftway not make it?
Well, I haven't seen their business plan and I actually think that
but you know, they had a following.
I don't actually think they were
here in this room. It served both those stores served as strong community focuses for how many decades, I don't know, but why did they fail?
I mean, again, I can't speak to them specifically, but I can talk about trends in the market. If they weren't updating their product mix to reflect organic, that's a huge shift in how people are purchasing. If they were staying with the conventional produce, I think, again, our information shows that a higher income person seeks out organics. If that product mix was not right for the neighborhood and they didn't understand that, nor were they testing it, that's a business failure. If they didn't have the right marketing approach to this particular demographic and the commuter daily trips through, I mean, that could be a deficit to why it didn't work. I don't know if the landlord increased the rent on the property that no longer made it viable. I mean, I don't know the conditions of which that specific store failed after grocers did not fail. I mean, we're successful for a century there. I can't speak specifically to why that one failed. I mean, I think you have to constantly be present with what the market is and respond to that, and that takes effort. And I don't know if that's what they were applying to that neighborhood.
Okay. Thank you.
So can I go back? So you represent a single property owner.
Correct.
And does your client object to a multifamily development at that site?
Not if it included a grocery component.
And what's the maximum density in that site?
I think we calculated about 35 units without any non-residential use.
So your client would be fine with a substantial apartment building as long as in the ground floor there was some kind of grocery store. And does the hearing officer's report, and particularly around trip generation, support that kind of density?
It can't support 35 units plus a retail or a residential. I think we figured out, I can't remember exactly what we figured out in terms of how many units you could have plus a 10,000 or so square foot grocery, but we figured it out. I think it was about, I don't know.
You actually, in your packet, I'm assuming you have a packet before you, you will have scenario models by Winnebago Planning, and there's five scenarios presented to you with the trip cap considered in all five scenarios.
Okay, but this is our chance to actually have you answer the questions.
I don't have that packet, so.
You don't?
So what is the, if you have the, from your point of view, the ideal grocery store, how many units are left?
I think about 20.
I don't know. Which one are you referencing? So those are all the scenarios.
About 20, 25. Okay. About 25.
What are the formal boundaries of this neighborhood? So does the neighborhood extend?